and welcome to a brand new cricket podcast. Heads and tails, because let's face it, the outcome of almost all cricket is decided by the toss. And sorry, Australia, but we haven't yet warmed up to the bat flip. Also, heads and tails, because we will look to cover the head, the tail, and everything in between of cricket news every week. And also take you back in time for you to make head and tail of some fun cricket stories. I'm your host, Abhishek Chopra, at L_choppernose on Twitter. And at this point in time, allow me to introduce my co-host slash partner in crime slash infamous tail ender with a head full of cricket trivia, Nitin Sundar, who plays a mean leg glance when required. He's the most unpronounceable at the rate KNITTINS on Twitter. Say hello, Nitin, and tell us what do you think about the podcast name.
Hello, Abhishek. Thanks for that wonderful intro. I'm going to call you Choppernose going forward, as you're well known on Twitter. As far as the name is concerned, I absolutely love it. You did say the toss tends to decide the results. I don't completely agree with that. But the toss does play an integral part in cricket, and heads and tails. And we're going for a pun with tails over there. So I love it. All kinds of wordplay is welcome. So great name. Well done.
Fantastic. The top story this week is from the world of women's cricket. India has won the inaugural Women's Under-19 T20 World Cup under the captaincy of Shefali Verma against England at Potchefstroom in South Africa. England were bowled out for only 68, and then India got home with 7 wickets and 6 overs to spare. Lots of positives emerging for India from this tournament beyond what it means in the larger sense. The Indian fielding and catching was a sight for sore eyes. Shweta Sehrawat's batting at the top of the order was top class, and she was the top scorer in the tournament. Another Chopra, Parshvi Chopra, was the second highest wicket taker with her amazing leg spin. And Neeraj Chopra, the ace javelin thrower, made a guest appearance when he addressed the Indian team before the match and encouraged them for the match. And that worked out quite well. Did you happen to catch the match, Nitin?
I have a question for you, Choppernose. Was Nikhil Chopra by any chance the coach of this team, and was Akash Chopra the main commentator?
That would have been quite nice. But they have left the fame part of Chopra to me for this one, and to Neeraj and to Parshvi. The coach was Nushin Khadir, who was one of the people who lost the first ever final that the senior India women's played in.
So, good
riddance of those terrible memories for her, and she's bringing in happy tidings now.
Happy tidings for all of women's cricket. I know you focused on the fact that India won and Indian players did very well in this tournament. Shefali Verma, of course, also got to play, being one of the young prodigies in the world of women's cricket right now. But it's just been a fantastic time for women's cricket, right? Firstly, this tournament is also happening for the first time, Under-19 women's cricket. India winning it is a great shot in the arm for the overall sport, as we know, because Indian cricket really runs world cricket across genders, must be said. And we also had the other big news of the week, which was the Women's Premier League, not the Women's Indian Premier League, but the Women's Premier League, which I just love that name. It says, it literally is planting a flag for women's cricket in the Indian cricket landscape. And we had some excellent, exciting bidding, I must say. And the teams have been now sold to multiple conglomerates, which are all buying into women's cricket in a big way. So, yeah, that's the other exciting thing happening this week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Over then to the men's side of things. What have the men's cricketers been up to? This is, of course, the ODI World Cup year, and a lot of the cricket that's happening in 2023 will be, for a change, geared towards one-day cricket, which otherwise tends to be the forgotten format. There is, of course, the Border Gavaskar Trophy, which is going to be Test cricket kicking off shortly as well, and we do have the World Test Championship final also this year. But what really has caught our attention, and my attention for sure, has been the new approach that the Indian one-day team has brought to the fore, the Indian men's one-day team. There has been a lot of accusation about, you know, conservative batting, both in T20 cricket and in one-day cricket. A lot of the old-timers playing cricket in a slightly outdated fashion, etc. But if you look at the recent games, starting, I would say, with the third one-dayer in Bangladesh, followed by 3 games against Sri Lanka and 3 more games now against New Zealand, the Indian batting has kicked up a couple of extra gears, should say, with Rohit Sharma and Shubman Gill especially setting the tone right at the top. Virat Kohli seems to be in the pink patch of form in one-day cricket. He's managed to shake away some of the indifference. Still seems to have some trouble against spin, but he's going for the bowling all the time. And it's just amazing that someone like Ishan Kishan, who got a double hundred in the first of those seven games that I mentioned, could not even find a place in the team immediately after that. And it's still not a certainty, right? So it's looking good as far as the Indian batting setup is concerned going into a World Cup here. Have you been following these games, Abhishek? And what is your take on Indian one-day cricket right now?
The batting approach, the fresh batting approach has been really good to watch. It's one of those things that we've been talking about for a very, very long time. On these pitches, the flat Indian pitches, which offer good carry, good bounce, the ball comes onto the bat. You are losing in a losing frame of mind if you're not targeting at least 375, 400 to start off, unless the pitch is insanely difficult to bat on. And for me, seeing Kohli find a second wind has been especially fascinating, being a big fan of the man. And Shubman Gill is finally coming good, for all the promise that he has shown since a very early age. I remember Simon Dool, commenting on Shubman Gill and on the other prodigy from that time, Prithvi Shaw, when they were both playing the Under-19 World Cup for India, on how Prithvi might be the captain and might have gotten more runs, etc. But it was Shubman Gill who was far and away the breakout star for the future. And he's really proving, what he's made of with that insane double hundred, which was so, so good to watch.
Quite spectacular. And it's not just Simon Dool, right? I think Rahul Dravid has been watching Shubman Gill come up through the ranks, both, I think, India A, India Under 19, and now in the Indian setup. And there are people close to Dravid who have mentioned that, even Rahul Dravid has held Gill in very high regard through the years and has earmarked him as someone who's going to, do really well. There was a beautiful video of Dravid and Gill having a conversation after one of those knocks in these games, where Dravid was asking Gill about Gill's father's reaction to him throwing away, a 200 by getting out after scoring just a century. And Gill was quite sheepish and admitting that his father is a hard taskmaster, and Dravid was quite happy to know that even if the coach is going light on his player, the father isn't, right? And I think it's a very nice, lovely little tale. It's the story of many Indian cricketers where the parents, and specifically I think the fathers, sacrifice a lot to put their kids through cricket, right? I think Cheteshwar Pujara's father, Arvind Pujara, I think converted his entire life into basically making cricket happen for Cheteshwar Pujara, right? And I know King Williams was one of the popular movies that came out in the last year or so. I think, and there have been many examples of draconian parents, parents who just go crazy to try and make sport happen for their children. There are also these are also tales of love and ambition, right? And it's great to see it when it all comes together the way it is for young Shubman Gill. So good luck to Shubman. And I think he is now earmarked as the opener for Indian one-day cricket, with Shikhar Dhawan's career seemingly at a dead end at the moment. So going into the World Cup, it's Gill to lead the attack for India, really. And good luck to him.
Absolutely. It also reminds me of Yograj Singh, who played a couple of one-dayers for India and then became a cricket father, as you put it, for his son Yuvraj Singh, who went on to do great things in white ball cricket especially, and is now has now taken Sachin Tendulkar's son, Arjun Tendulkar, under his wings. And Arjun Tendulkar has started off his Ranji Trophy career really nicely with a century for Goa, the state, the adopted state for Arjun. So the relationship between cricket fathers and cricket sons is a beautiful one when it comes off.
So it's time then to go into the meat of what we want to talk about today. This show is, of course, about talking about what's happening in cricket this week and then tying it back to some interesting stories from the past, right? I have a quick question for you, Chopper Nose, before we move on. Can you tell me how many times India have gone past 300 in one day cricket?
Oh, wow. I am going to say more than 100 now. I do know that they've gone past 300, the most number of times in ODI cricket now.
No, that's a good guess. I'll give you close to full marks for above 100. The exact number is 128, right?
Wow.
And it's now become such a frequent occurrence. Like just the seven games that I mentioned to you, right, at the start of this, which is the games against Bangladesh, Sri Lanka and New Zealand. Just in those seven games alone, India have gone past 300 five times. In fact, they've gone past 350 four times. And the fifth one was a 349. So it was 409 in Chattogram against Bangladesh. There's 373 and 390 against Sri Lanka, 349 and 385 against New Zealand. And all of this has happened since the 10th of December. In fact, the last four have happened in the month of January 2023. So the 300, forget 300, even 350 is not really much of a Rubicon right now. In fact, India nearly lost a couple of these games despite scoring so many runs. So that's how ubiquitous the 300 has become. But it wasn't always like that, was it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe you have an interesting anecdote to tell us about a match featuring the number 349.
India got 349 for 8 against New Zealand in the first ODI on 18th January 2023. But that is not the 349 that we want to talk about today. I'm going to go back all the way to Karachi in the year 2004, when India went to Pakistan after, I don't even know how many years, I think after 1989, this was the first full tour that India were taking to Pakistan. They did visit for ODIs, I think, once in between, but this was a full tour. And this was sort of the time when India-Pakistan cricket relations were, you know, in the post-Kargil thaw, so to speak. There was a lot of outreach from both countries to try and, use cricket as a pathway to try and, mend relationships. And this tour really was the start of all of that in 2004, when Sourav Ganguly led the Indian team across the border. I think there was a lot of support to this, both from on the political side as well. I think, I'm not sure if it was Musharraf in Pakistan back then, but it was Atal Bihari Vajpayee in India who put a lot behind this team. I think the exact terms he used were, why don't you tell us in Hindi what Mr. Vajpayee had to say?
Vajpayee said, "Khel hi nahi, dil bhi jeeto," which essentially means don't just win the games, win hearts of the Pakistani people too. And I believe that's exactly what the Indian team ended up doing in that tour.
Absolutely. It was a fantastic tour. And we know a few people who were part of media contingents, etc., that went on that tour. Rahul Bhattacharya, one of the top cricket writers in the world, wrote a fantastic book about covering that tour for Cricinfo, called Pundits from Pakistan. It's a book that we highly recommend. And the kind of hospitality that was extended to players, to media people, to everyone who went from India. Lots of people traveled from India to watch those games. And they didn't have to pay for food. They didn't have to pay for accommodation. The hospitality across the border was quite something else. And the team also, Lakshmipathy Balaji, the fast bowler who some of our listeners might remember, was, playing for India. Literally, he was in his first season of international cricket and he became an overnight star. He's been immortalized forever with a famous chant from the crowds of Pakistan. Why don't you tell us again as the Punjabi expert?
Yeah, so there was this popular song back in the day called Babu Ji Zara Dheere Chalo. And promptly the Pakistani crowd, which also is a big fan of Indian, the Hindi film industry, modified it murdered it a little bit to convert it to Balaji Zara Dheere Chalo, because Balaji was all over the place on that tour. There's a particular video when he and a couple of other Indian players go to Lahore University of Management Studies, and he absolutely kills it with his smile.
He was smiling a lot. He was bowling some insane outswingers, a lot of induckers. He was getting a lot of wickets. And he was also celebrating a bit like Rajnikanth. He would slick his hair back after taking a wicket. All of which was great stuff. Like, everyone enjoyed watching him do all of that. And all of Pakistan seemed to be getting behind him. So we are going to talk about the first game in that tour, right? And this was in Karachi. the first match of this tour, really. So it was a lot of expectations from both sides. I think both teams were kind of cagey going into this game because they still don't know what to expect, right? Like India-Pakistan games were always considered bigger than normal games. And yes. India batted first in Karachi. They scored 349, which is the number that we mentioned earlier. And it was an extremely close game. It was scores of 340, 350 were not common, not that common back in those days. So 349 was a massive score. India, yes. In fact, at one stage in that innings, looked like they would go past 400. They then lost wickets in the middle overs and had to settle for 349. Pakistan nearly chased that down and wow. fell, you know, I think, what, 5 runs short. They had to hit a 6 of the last ball to win the game and they could not. Ashish Nehra promptly bowled a full toss, which Moin Khan was not able to hit for 6 and was instead caught at mid-off, and that's how that game ended. But extremely memorable game. I'm sure you have memories of where you were when you watched this game. Abhishek, tell us about it.
I honestly don't remember where I was when I watched this game. But I think I was perhaps, somewhere in class 11. And yeah, I mean, all of us were really looking forward to it. And by that time, cricket broadcasting on TV, etc. had really come of age. So to get all the live action on this channel called 10 Sports, I don't know if
yes.
people today know that channel or not, but to get all the live action on that channel and having on commentary guys like Dean Jones, the late great Dean Jones, Robin Jackman, all of this was quite fascinating. And through the eyes and ears of the Indian cricketers and the media contingent, people like me got their first look at Pakistan cricket, really.
Wow. Okay. You really dated yourself there by saying, or rather you did the opposite of dating yourself there. You're really a young strapping lad. El Chopper knows you were in school in 2004. I was in engineering college. I remember exactly where I was when this game began because I had an exam in my college, which I had to give. And but my mind was entirely on this cricket game and on finishing the exam as fast as I could so that I could watch the match. If I remember right, I come back and I turn on the television and the first ball that I see is Sachin Tendulkar cutting, I think, Shoaib Akhtar straight to point and getting out. India had already got off to a rapid start.
Yes.
I think, as always, Pakistan all over the place. Tendulkar was dismissed off a no ball. I think Sehwag was dropped at first slip. All of that had happened. Lots of boundaries were scored. And then Sachin gets out. And then Sehwag goes berserk, right? And this was back in the day when, you did not have free hits for no balls. Pakistan had this fast bowler called Rana Navedul Hasan, which, again, some of our listeners might remember, is a bowler who did fairly well for Pakistan. This was towards the end of their great fast bowling era, and the next great fast bowling era was yet to take off. So they had someone like Naved to hold the reins together.
Yeah,
Naved bowled an over to Sehwag in that game, which had 5 no balls. So 6 no balls, of which I think Sehwag sent 4 to the boundary. You did not have free hits back in that day. And if you did, trust me, that over would still be going on. I have no doubt that you'd have never completed that over. But he didn't have to bowl those free hits. And at one stage, he had conceded 21 runs of one ball in that over.
Wow.
But he had the last laugh. He bowled a slow ball and managed to dismiss Sehwag. But yeah, India managed to still put 349 on the board thanks to Rahul Dravid anchoring the innings after early wickets had fallen. He gets dismissed also by Shoaib Akhtar with another slower ball on 99 of 104 balls, invaluable runs. But yeah, 349 is what India got.
The one thing that's my distinct memory from that match is I also started watching somewhere when the first wicket partnership was going on between Sachin and Sehwag. And I mean, at that time, it was already like the cult of those two together was already, taking shape. And when Sehwag actually got out, I remember India's run rate being 10.02.
Yeah.
And that was like insane for that era. It was not early in the match so that you think it was just a few, hits to the ground, to the boundary. It was perhaps somewhere in the 25th or 30th over, I don't remember. But 10.02 flashing on that screen is like a distinct memory.
If you think about it, Vajpayee said, "Dil bhi jeeto." Literally, on the first day of this tour, I think the Indian team managed to do that. Scoring these runs the way they did it, right? Originally looking like they'll make 500, then making 349, then letting this game get so close, and then to hold their nerve. Then there was a great catch towards the end of the game with Mohammad Kaif taking a blinder Ashish Nehra holding his nerve, getting Moin yes. Khan out, right? Moin Khan, who used to be one of the biggest sort of pains in India's necks in the end. You know, it was one of the first, a few times, I believe, Moin Khan failing against India. And another scene which a lot of fans might remember is Javed Miandad was the coach of the Pakistan team. And if you remember what Waseem Akram also wrote about in his book, right? Miandad never realized that he's finished playing. His retirement is on. Right? Even when he was coach, he believed he has to be on the field. So he's literally setting the field from outside. Right? He's telling, oh, bowl, you know, do you try and cut this to the offside? You can actually see him signaling to Shoaib Malik and to Moin Khan towards the end. But this is just that sort of game, right? Where you literally... it captured the imagination of the Pakistan public as well as the Indian public that was cheering them on from home. It really, I think, set heroes for that generation in the Pakistani minds. I think Sehwag became a big star in Pakistan, despite doing so well against them. In this game, he went on to score a 300 in the test match that followed. El Balaji, like we mentioned, became a huge hero. Tendulkar was always loved. I think Vajpayee's vision was very much met by the Indian team and by the Pakistan team during this tour.
Absolutely. Yes. The other thing that I remember was how beautifully Yusuf Yohana, who was back then known as Yusuf Yohana, later changed his name to Muhammad Yusuf, how beautifully he batted. We were discussing how India went into this match with only four bowlers. And Ganguly and Sehwag and Sachin had to do the mopping up as the fifth bowler.
Another sign of how times have changed, right? You literally cannot go into a one-day game now with a fifth bowler that of that quality, right?
Yes.
And there's not a diss on Tendulkar and Sehwag and Ganguly, who were fine back when they were bowling. But the game has changed so much now that they would just be taken to the cleaners every time.
Yes. And some of the shots that Yusuf and Inzamam hit of these three bowlers in particular, they obviously targeted them because they were the weak link in the attack. This was some shot making.
Seriously, Inzamam was at the peak of his powers. I remember growing up watching Pakistan repeatedly beating us. I know we're going to talk about another game where India played Pakistan, but just foreshadowing that. Growing up watching Pakistan beat India repeatedly, you were obviously scared of their bowlers, but you were terrified of their batting. Especially that middle order, right? We had players like Sanjay Manjrekar and Ajay Jadeja in our middle order, which was okay, right? They were doing their best. Nayan Mungia was a wicketkeeper. They had Ijaz Ahmed at three, who for some reason had played 150 ODIs already. And if that was not... And by the way, this is after Saeed Anwar and Amir Sohail, who are like crazy hitters, right? Like kamikaze smashers who would anyway take down Venkatesh Prasad and Javakul Srinath every time. Then you had Ijaz Ahmed, who once, I think, some of the sixes he hit against India in that Lahore ODI. They're still flying around. The UFOs over Lahore still being spotted. Then you had Inzi, who was still a young player back then in the 90s. Yeah. He only emerged in 1992. Then you had Salim Malik, who had played like 250 ODIs. You're like, are they making up these numbers? Like, when did Salim Malik play 250 ODIs? And not just 250, he's also... Once in 1987, he scored a 40-ball 70 against India.
Fixed 200 of them, maybe.
Let's not go there. But yes, absolutely. And then you had Javed Bhai. Javed Miandad anchoring, you know, after all of these guys. In case all of them failed, you still had Javed Miandad. That was a freaking scary batting lineup, right? Indeed. And unfortunately for Inzamam, he was the one player who was kind of young when this era was at its peak. And then all these guys retired and you had just Inzi. But thankfully for Inzi, he then had Muhammad Yusuf, as you mentioned, and Yunus Khan come and take over the mantle. Very fine players, but not in the same league as these other guys we mentioned. Also because they played in a batting era and all of that. But great memories of... And Inzamam was walking on water in that tour. Some of the shots he was playing, just incredible. Played superb century. Was he the man of the match? I think in my book, he should have been the man of the match. Nearly won the game for Pakistan.
I think they gave the man of the match to Dravid for his 99. But
in fact, they did give it to Inzamam back in the day.
Oh, wow. Man of the match from the losing team. That's a big one.
Yeah, because it was a big 100 also. Dravid was a sub-100 strike rate, 99. Whereas Inzamam got 122 of 102 balls.
So the other thing I remember from that Pakistan chase was some confusion regarding the Inzamam 100. There was an electronic scoreboard and there were these scorers sitting somewhere on the ground.
Yes.
And At one point, Inzi had already celebrated his 100, and Inzi, yeah. Inzi, the celebration was anyway not too out there, and then he had to do it all over again.
We are now going to talk about the first time ever that India scored 300 in a one-day game. Chopper knows, I know you picked this game, but you say you were in school in 2004. You probably were not yet conceived in 1996. But anyway, tell us about your memories when you were still a gleam in your father's eye.
No, I was still in school, much younger. In April of 1996, and this was a match that was held in Sharjah, which is obviously something that came up in the 80s as a big cricket venue. Because, you know, if you play cricket in India or you play cricket in Pakistan, there were people who were always opposing it. And so Sharjah was like this nice neutral venue somewhere in the middle of the desert. And they built a nice stadium over there. So question to you, Nitin. Before the match that I'm going to talk about, India had played Pakistan 17 times at Sharjah. Can you guess how many matches did India win out of those 17?
I'm going to go with 4.
That's amazing. The right answer is 3. So this was the 4th win for India at Sharjah against Pakistan. So let's first go to 1996. As you would remember, this was the World Cup year, the World Cup that was held in India and Pakistan and in Sri Lanka. And after the World Cup, which Sri Lanka won, Pakistan were out in the quarterfinals. India, of course, went to the semifinal and lost a terrible match against Sri Lanka. The madness did not end. That was the era of the glut of ODIs. Yeah. And it was not even close to what we are experiencing today.
Yes.
But India and Pakistan still did not have enough of one-day cricket. And so off they went to Sharjah, where they were joined by South Africa. And they played yet another one-day tournament, a triangular tournament this time. Very imaginatively called the Pepsi Sharjah Cup. And it featured 6 matches, basically each team playing the other team twice and the final. And it started on 12th of April. So you have 7 matches. The tournament started on 12th of April. Can you tell me when the tournament ended?
Exactly 7 days later.
19th April is the right answer. Because and even at that time, the administrators did not care for the players. So in the April maddening heat of Sharjah.
Yeah, and these were day games, right? Yeah, this is before...
Days games.
These were day games.
Floodlights was...
Yeah, you could actually say they were days games. I think the players must have been dazed by the end of it. In the desert sun.
Absolutely. Yeah, at the start of the tournament, Pakistan beat India on a Friday. And then South Africa beat both Pakistan and India. The day of the week did not matter. And then India and Pakistan came around again on a Monday. India won the toss and decided to bat first. Vikram Rathore, the current Indian batting coach, made his debut, was sent on his way very promptly by Waqar Yunus. And then Sachin Tendulkar, who had got out for low scores in the previous matches, was not at his peak after the World Cup high. He came good and he came good quite amazingly well. The other guy who came good for India, both Sachin and this guy scored centuries. Proper throwback of a player, Navjot Singh Sidhu.
In fact, the first time ever that two players scored hundreds, at least for India, in one-day cricket.
Exactly right.
Well. Yeah.
Exactly right. And the abiding memory of Navjot Singh Sidhu from this match is how he hit young Sakleen, who was just making his way into an international cricket for youth sixes.
Young Sakleen was merely a suckling back then.
And absolutely.
In Moin Khan's eyes. No, I too felt exactly. In fact, the one of the striking images of from this game for me is the way Sidhu goes after Sakleen. And Sidhu really, very interesting cricketer, right? Had two distinct phases to his career. Once when Rajan Bala said, you know, this guy is a shotless wonder who cannot play any strokes. And then
Strokeless wonder.
And then Sidhu goes back and re-emerges as a... as an attacking player who would not let a spinner settle down ever. He had this interesting stance, right? It'd be a very low set stance, looking much lower than a batsman normally would. You could see that he's always trying to suss the length out, or he's trying to get that half a second on a bowler. Extra. And he used to charge out. He would never come out of the crease, you know, in half a mind, or he'd not come out languidly.
Absolutely.
He would rush out of the crease. He would run half the way to long on and deposit the ball past long on. He did that to Shane Warne. in 98 in India, mm-hmm. he did that to Saqlain in Sharjah. And he had the other shot, which was that, you know, that very pivoting, you know, sort of rumbling pull shot that he used to play. All over the place. One of the clumsiest, ugliest shots in the world, but very effective. Very effectively had a great record in one day cricket. Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah, he was one of the, he was the highest scorer for India in one day cricket at one point in time. The other thing about Sidhu, which stands out for me, was he was one of the first Indian players to hold his bat up in the stance as the bowler was running in. Everyone used to tap their bat. He would hold his bat up, probably because someone told him that, you know, at, against pace, you won't get that much amount of time to get your bat up and bring it down again. And so he was like, okay, I'm going to hold it like the mythical club wielder. Of
like an Olympic torch.
Olympic torch, yeah. So that was Sidhu, who came good against Saqlain particularly. When you see the scorecard, he hit just three sixes and three fours. But those three sixes like will forever stand out in your memory. When Sidhu got out, obviously to a run out, Jadeja continued his merry ways from the Bangalore World Cup quarterfinal, where he had carted around Waqar Yunus to all parts of the ground. Here too, he hits 1-6 of Waqar, but then falls to Waqar himself of a wide Yorker. And then comes Jawagal Srinath as a pinch hitter. And he hits 2-4s. But he gets out while trying a shot from 2023. He moves outside his off stump, tries to scoop a ball above the fine leg fielder. Yeah. The ball promptly goes and collides with the stumps and he's away. And then comes Azhar. Azhar, for the time he played, used this wafer thin Reebok blade. And if Gavaskar was in commentary when Azhar was batting, you would be sure to listen to a mention about how Azhar's bat is so thin and he has to hit the sweet spot every time he goes for a big shot. And the big shots came good for Azhar in the final over of the Indian innings. The bowler is this lesser known Pakistani guy with a unibrow called Ataur Rahman. And he was taken for some 22 or 24 runs of the last over. So the Indian innings ended on a high.
26 runs. So 4-2-2-6-6-6. Yeah.
Wow.
What a sequence. And I mean, yeah, kids today again will be like, what's a big deal? We've seen 36 runs being scored so many times. And, you know, these kinds of things happen in cricket. Wasn't the case back in the day. And Azharuddin was going through a terrible run of form.
Absolutely.
So much so that he was not confident to come out and bat. And I believe Tendulkar had to badger him and make him go out to bat when he did in the 48th over of this innings. After Srinath, like you mentioned, had got out. So he comes in the 48th over, barely enough time to get his eye in. He gets stuck into Ataur Rahman in the 50th. 4-2-2-6-6-6. He finishes off 29, not out of 10 balls. And the penultimate ball is when India goes past 300. And everybody takes note of the fact, yes, for the first time ever, India has gone past 300. You mentioned all the commentators, the usual suspects are there. Can you tell me who the non-striker was when India went past 300 for the first time?
I am going to say Manjrekar.
Absolutely. All the usual suspects were right there. So Sanjay Manjrekar was stuck at the non-striker's end, cheering on as Azharuddin laid into Ataur Rahman. But as tended to be the case back in those days, Pakistan took forever to bowl their overs. And this used to be a problem, especially with Pakistan, with all those fast bowlers and their long run-ups and too many no balls. They were docked 2 overs in the chase.
Yes.
And they probably would have won the game if not for that, right? They did get quite close. In fact, both these games we spoke about technically should have been won by Pakistan. They got within striking distance. This one, if it were a 50-over chase, I think they would have won. They had to do it in 48 overs, which meant they went a little more aggressively than they had to and they ran out of time.
The last wicket to fall off the Pakistan innings was actually young Saqlain again. Tendulkar was bowling to him some nice in-swinging medium pace bowling. And the last wicket was a proper Yorker, a Yorker so awesome that it actually made Saqlain fall down on the ground. And he was promptly declared LBW by the umpire. And something that we saw, which we had never seen earlier, probably never saw later also, Tendulkar gave Saqlain the send-off of his life. He's never going to forget it. Yeah. And Tendulkar perhaps is never going to talk about it. But if you're going to watch the video of the match, you don't have the time in the world to watch all of it. Just go to the last bit where Tendulkar gets Sakleen LBW and gives him a proper send-off.
Yeah.
It's going to set you up for a nice big day ahead for sure.
No, indeed. I think that's a nice way to close the loop on this game.
On that lovely note, here's us signing off on episode 1 of Heads and Tails. If you liked our podcast, please share it with all your cricket-loving friends. Till we meet you again for another episode of Heads and Tails, this is me, El Chopernos, and at Nitin's signing off.
Thank you so much, El Chopernos. I had a great time recording the first episode of Heads and Tails. I would also request all our listeners to please spread the news about this new podcast, because otherwise Shubman Gill's father is going to be angry with you. So please do your little bit for this corner of the cricketing audio space, and we'll see you again in another episode of Heads and Tails. Until then, bye-bye.
You were listening to Heads and Tails, hosted by Abhishek Chopra and Nitin Sundar. Produced by Audiomatic. Producers for Audiomatic, Rajesh Tahil and Avdhoot Kanolkar. Assistant Producer, Pia Kash.